I'm managing editor Brian Schott. We're less than 3 months away from Election Day, and some of the trends that will shape the November vote are starting to come into focus. Democrat Joe Biden has a lead in the polls on Republican Donald Trump, but will that hold? Will the distaste for Trump among many Utah voters loosen the GOP's grip on the state? Can Democrat Ben McAdams hold off a tough challenge from Republican Burgess Owens? And are there any surprises lurking on the Utah electoral landscape? To get some answers, I'm joined today by Nathan Gonzalez of Inside Elections. He's one of the nation's top election forecasters, and you can subscribe to his publication at insideelections.com. Full disclosure, I'm a subscriber, and his publication is a crucial part of my media diet and a must-read for political junkies. Before we get to our conversation, you can help us continue to grow our audience by sharing this podcast on social media or telling your friends about it. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That definitely helps new people find the show. And if you're a new listener, thanks for the download, and you can subscribe to new episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Now, here's my conversation with Nathan Gonzalez of InsideElections.com. Joining me today on the podcast is Nathan Gonzalez with InsideElections.com. Nathan, you're one of the top election forecasters in the country, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk with you as we sit less than 3 months away from the 2020 election.
Yeah, hey, no problem. Thank you for having me. I admit I do sometimes feel a little bit, I'm humbled and maybe feel a little inadequate whenever I, you know, go on podcasts with folks that are in the state every day, living and breathing it, but I'll do my best.
Well, you don't need to be humbled, because a lot of times I don't know what I'm talking about. So that's why I talk to people who are smarter than me. The top of mind, you moved your electoral college rating of Utah from solid Republican to lean Republican, or likely Republican. That's not that big of a difference, but can you explain what that means and why you made that change? Because, you know, it doesn't mean that Trump's not going to win the state unless something absolutely catastrophic happens. But, you know, that's a significant shift when you look at Utah, which has been rock solid Republican for years. And I'm guessing this is just a Trump thing.
Right. I do not doubt that Utah is a Republican state. I doubt how much of a Trump state it is. And, fundamentally moving it from solid, moving it out of solid just means that I don't think Republicans, or I don't think the Trump campaign, can take it for granted. That doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a flood of presidential ads on the airwaves, but I think there's enough evidence that shows that the president is at least somewhat vulnerable. And this is in a broader context of the Trump. Trump is underperforming significantly. He's underperforming, I would say, at least by 8 points or more in states and districts all around the country, and that includes Utah. So yeah, it's a we don't take this lightly, but I think it should be at least watched.
Is there another way to look at this? That if Utah has moved from solid Republican to likely Republican, then that means the Trump campaign is going to have trouble winning some of the more swingy states down the line. Because if you're seeing a shift towards Biden, that means the whole map is kind of shifting towards him, right?
Correct. I mean, when you look at the initial kind of agreed upon swing states or battleground states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Florida, you know, most of them, Biden has at least a significant advantage. And I do think you could, not every state, but you could take our ratings and sort of push them all one to the left, or that's what we've been doing over the last couple of months. And so the Utah change is a piece of that. And we have to see, you know, without Evan McMullen on the ballot this time, it's going to be a little bit different, but it's pretty clear that Republicans in Utah are not as excited about President Trump as Republicans in other states.
I agree with that. And if you look at the polling, he only got 45% of the vote here in 2018 and 2016. And his approval ratings have hovered right around that. I mean, he's been right around 45%. Our polling has had him maybe above 51% one time. Most of the time, it's been right around that 45, 46, maybe 48%. So he's not expanding his base at all. I've talked to people here in the state, and when Evan McMullen was on the ballot, they were like, you know, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but I've got someone to vote for. So now they don't have an alternative or an acceptance of alternative on the ballot for them. So can we look at that as maybe Republicans might stay home. They might just not vote in the presidential election. I mean, this is going to have some down ballot effects, right?
Yeah, it's possible. I think if there's a voter who stays home in the 2020 elections and they can't find a reason to vote, then I'm not sure anything is going to inspire them to vote. And that's why when it comes down to a black and white binary choice between a Republican and a Democrat, I still think President Trump is going to win Utah, but it's probably not going to be by the margin that we might expect if it were President Ted Cruz or President Marco Rubio running for re-election.
I think that's a really good point. Looking down the ballot a little bit at our congressional races, you know, we've got three Republicans, and you've rated all of the Republicans who are or the seats that are currently held by Republicans as solid Republican. And then we've got the fourth congressional district, which is Ben McAdams, which you have as tilt Democratic. So, I mean, that tells me that this is still going to be a really, really tough race, against Burgess Owens. And it's going to be hard for the Democrats to hang on to this seat.
Yeah, and just having it not be in toss-up and in tilting Democratic is evidence of Republican problems nationwide. I mean, Ben McAdams in a normal election cycle should be, maybe a top five, most likely to lose, or maybe the race would even be over at this point. But the fact that he's not only very much in the race, but usually leading at least narrowly or up a few points in most of the polling, tells me the Republicans are having troubles nationwide, even winning the easy seats. I mean, there's a scenario where Republicans defeat Ben McAdams and still don't even get close to the majority. But we're watching it. I expect there to be, millions of dollars that are spent. Republicans, I'm surprised, are a little more bullish about the race than what I think the data suggests right now. But, we're obviously still watching them.
I've heard some people talking about how Joe Biden might actually carry the fourth congressional district in Utah, which would be a significant development because a Democratic presidential candidate has not won a congressional district in the state since 1964 when LBJ carried the entire state. Now, we only had two congressional districts then, but I mean, that's more than a generation ago. And our polling has shown that Biden actually has a lead over Trump in that district. It's one of these suburban districts that gave the Democrats the majority in the House in 2018. So do you see that as a possibility?
Sure. I think the margin was only 7 points, I believe, for Trump, 7 points and some change in 2016. And going back to, I think the president is slumping by at least 8 points. And so that is very much in the realm of possibility. And that, decreases the number of crossover voters that Congressman McAdams would need. And he may not need any crossover voters at all if Joe Biden is able to carry it. And I think when people outside of Utah think of Utah, it's just this big red rural state. But you're right. People should understand, those that are listening that aren't living in Utah, that there is, this is should be considered more of a suburban district, at least where the population center of the district is. And it reminds me of the conversation about Texas. We think of Texas as this big red state, but there are these growing pockets of blue suburban territory that are starting to drive things as well.
And that's kind of indicative of the troubles that Trump has had nationwide, right? Because the Republican coalition was built on a lot of these suburban districts where, they're majority Republican, and there was a big backlash against Trump in 2006, in 2018. And it doesn't seem like there's been any, move back towards Trump, especially with women voters, right?
Correct. And I think a lot of Republicans that I talk to about races are convinced that 2018 was the Democratic high watermark or the Republican low, was the valley. And I'm not convinced. I think we are headed for a worse Republicans, doing worse. Let's go back to 2000. This could be closer to 2006, 2008. Remember 2006, Republicans had a bad midterm. Democrats came roaring into the House majority. 2 years later, the hemorrhaging was not over for the Republican Party. Senator Obama won the White House. Democrats picked up another 20 seats. And that feels closer to where we're headed this fall.
Last thing I'd like to ask you about the Utah specific races, and I've been having these conversations with a lot of Democrats and Democratic supporters. They think that Representative Chris Stewart in Utah's second congressional district is vulnerable. And you look at his polling, he got for 44% approval, 44% disapproval in our latest poll. You know, he doesn't have a lot of name ID within the district. You know, that's also rated as an R plus 25 district by the Cook Political Report. If Chris Stewart is gettable, that means that Republicans are in big trouble everywhere else, because if an R plus 25 district is on the table, then there's a bunch of other districts that are just gone, right?
Correct. I mean, if the Stewart district is within reach, then Democrats are picking up, I think, a few dozen districts. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. And I'll say that when we are looking at, we're currently trying to identify what could a surprise race be. And we're taking, okay, where did President Trump, if he drops 6, 7, 8 points, you know, how far does that list go? And because President Trump only received 46% in 2016 in the Stewart district, you know, that would drop him below 40. And that's, again, there's Evan McMullen or the not Evan McMullen.
Yeah, for sure.
I get all of that, but it's let's put it this way. We're going to publish. We have our upcoming newsletter coming up here at the end of the week. And we might list a group of districts that kind of where should you look for a surprise? And the way we're going right now, the Stewart district is on that list of potential surprises.
That is fascinating. And that gives me an opportunity to give you a plug. Subscribe to the newsletter insideelections.com right now. It's well worth your while. If you're a political junkie, it is well worth the subscription. I'm a subscriber and it's invaluable. It's just some great stuff to read. So that is a plug for you. So let's back up now a little bit to the 30,000 foot view. What do you think is the state of play nationally? You know, if you look at the polling, Biden's lead in the polls, and I hate talking about the polls because there's people who don't understand polling and they're like, the polls in 2016, LOL. You know, that's such a stupid argument. But Biden's lead has been really, really durable for a long time, and we haven't seen this for a while. So what do you think is the state of play as we sit here less than 3 months to go?
I think Joe Biden has a clear advantage in the race. The race is not over. But I, even with 2016 in mind, I am uncomfortable ignoring the preponderance of data. It's not just the national polling. It's the state level polling. When we're doing our dives on House districts and asking about the presidential ballot in individual districts, that lines up with an election that Joe Biden has the advantage in. And so if the election were held today, I think Joe Biden wins, and I'm not even sure it's particularly close. Now, you know, you talked about the polling piece. Sure, it's possible that almost every partisan and nonpartisan pollster are making the same methodological mistake in the same direction. It's possible. It's not likely that that's happening. And people will often say, well, 3 months, that's an eternity, Brian. That a lot can happen. Like, you know, technically that's true, but I'm not sure that really, first of all, people are going to start getting ballots in September. That is not very far away. And I don't think that there's a news event that would cause a spike for the president. You know, he has had kind of a gradual decline in his numbers since about Memorial Day and afterward in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. And I think if he improves, it will be a gradual improvement. But again, he's running against the clock, and there's just not a lot of time to fundamentally change the trajectory of this race.
I think you put your finger right on it. I mean, if he improves, he hasn't stopped the bleeding right now. I mean, before he has any improvement in his polling numbers, he has to turn things around. And it doesn't seem to me like that has happened at this point, or if there's anything on the horizon that might actually do that.
Yeah, two of the things I hear the most from Republicans are, well, what if there's a vaccine? Like, well, first of all, I think we all want a vaccine. I don't think there's anyone in the country who doesn't want a vaccine. Is that really feasible? You know, just from my consumer reading of things, it doesn't feel like that is, you know, maybe a real distinct possibility. But who knows? The other thing is, I'm surprised the Republicans, how much stock they put in Joe Biden imploding during the debates, just self-destructing. Again, let's keep our minds open, Brian, about what the possibilities are. But I feel like Republicans have lowered the bar so much that if Joe Biden can perform, you know, for 90 minutes, an experienced politician, if he can just minimally keep it together, that he's going to do fine. And people say, well, what was the big deal? You know, he looks, sounds fine to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's one thing that I tell everyone, you know, the bar is set very low for Biden. And I think also another factor to look at when you talk about the impact of the debates, traditionally, the first debate doesn't go well for the incumbent. You know, they've been in a situation for 4 years where they haven't had someone coming after them. They haven't had, you know, haven't really been challenged on stuff. You know, you think back to what happened in the first debate between Obama and Romney. Romney cleaned his clock in that debate. I mean,
I think Obama just mailed it in.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess that's a pun now, but he literally mailed it in.
Yeah. So you look at that, and I just wonder how much debates will actually matter with this. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to watch, but the bar is set so low because they're, you know, trying to paint Obama's, trying to paint a Biden as this doddering old fool who is senile. And if he comes in and just holds his own, then, you know, I guess to your point, everyone's going to be like, so what's the problem here?
Yeah. And how confident Republicans are that the president speaking for, you know, if we divide up 90 minutes or however long, you know, he's going to be talking for a considerable amount of time and leaving himself open to saying something that doesn't go well. So I just, my overall view is, show me that something matters. I guess I assume that things don't matter until you prove to me that they do matter, because usually these news events, we treat everything as breaking news. Everything is a game changer. Usually when the dust settles, it comes back to where it was before.
Oh, spoken like a cynic who is after my heart. Is the defining issue of this election? I mean, it seems like it's going to be the coronavirus and the response to it. It seems like there's more things that could go sideways with the responses, especially once they open schools. I think that might be just a disaster waiting to happen. But there's so much pressure on opening the schools. Is there any other issue, do you think, that might gain some oxygen in this? Is there another game changer, or are we pretty much locked in, at least in your opinion, to this is going to be a referendum on the administration's response to this pandemic?
I think the coronavirus and the response is a huge piece of it, because that has that economic impact, right? I mean, those two things coupled together. But we can't ignore the race relations piece of it either. I think the Republicans and Democrats saw the president's numbers really take a turn in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing, specifically with the Lafayette Square, the walk across the park. First, the forcefully pushing out protesters, and then the walk across to the church and holding up the Bible. But that was a turning point in the race. I mean, not that the president had a huge advantage before then, but he started a decline. And so race relations are a piece of this. The other related piece to race relations is that the president wants to focus on law and order, right? He wants to focus on protests that are happening in a few cities, specifically in Portland, and try to essentially scare suburban voters into voting for him out of fear of what the country will look like if Biden and the Democrats are in charge. And that it could work. I'm skeptical, in part because I don't think there's not an imminent threat, or the people aren't seeing video on cable news of looting in suburban, you know, neighborhoods right now. Mm-hmm. It's in a few downtown city blocks of a few cities. And until or if it reaches into the actual suburbs, then maybe it starts to change some minds.
A couple more questions for you. What impact do you think President Trump's attacks on mail-in voting is going to have on this? I mean, we here in Utah are a mail-in voting state, and it works wonderfully. You know, he threatened to sue Nevada over this, but what effects do you think that's going to have on this?
It's not good. I might not sound like it. I try to be an optimistic person. It doesn't sound like it in this interview, but I think it is a way to delegitimize an election before it's happened. I mean, remember, he complained about an election that he won. He felt like the popular vote, losing the popular vote was people were using it to delegitimize his victory when it was just the reality. And somebody was talking about voters who were voting illegally in California. And I think this is just the next another chapter of that. I think it will cause, if President Trump indeed loses, it will cause some people to discredit the results. They will not consider Joe Biden to be a legitimate president. And I think that's harmful. I think if any of us should root for anything, I'm not suggesting we root for a specific person or a candidate, but let's root for conclusive results. Because if the presidential race is close or key Senate races are close, it's going to be tough, I think, for us to move forward as a country, because not every state is like Utah or Oregon or Washington that are used to handling the mass of mail-in ballots. You know, New York, it's 6 weeks, Brian, and New York's still counting ballots. You know, a lot of these states are not used to it. It's going to be messy. That doesn't mean it's illegitimate. It's just going to be messy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was going to ask you about being prepared for not knowing the results on election night. And I think that that's at least a lot of the media organizations are planning for that. And so and are starting to talk about that so they can kind of normalize it.
Right. And, you know, tens of millions of ballots will not have been counted. You know, will not be counted yet on election night. I also wonder how the cable news and the networks are going to handle just the traditional in-person voting, meaning normally they will wait until the polls close in a state in order to report results, even in the safely Republican or Democratic states. But what if there's a 4 or 5 hour line of people still waiting to vote? What are they going to do? What is coverage going to look like? And so I fear that even though this message has been out there, as you've talked about, that we're going to fall into the same things, and that will cause confusion. Let's put it another specific way, that there's a real possibility that Republicans will vote in greater numbers in person, and that their votes will be counted they'll be counted on election night sort of as normal. So President Trump may look like he's doing a lot better than what he will actually do. And in the subsequent days, as more mail-in ballots are counted, more Democratic ballots, you know, disproportionately will be counted. And he'll be saying, well, look, I was ahead on election night. And you're like, that's great, when all the ballots weren't counted yet. But it's going to be, I'm trying to hope for the best. But I don't know.
Yeah, I can see the optimist in you trying to fight for control. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm such a negative, cynical person. Do you think the Democrats take control of the Senate? It looks like the trend is in that way, but I'm wondering what you're seeing.
I do. It's definitely a close fight. But first of all, if I believe myself when I think that if Joe Biden has the advantage, then that actually decreases the number of seats Republican or Democrats need to win in the Senate by one, because with a 50-50 tie, then the new vice president would break any ties. So it lowers that threshold. And there are just so many, there are so many fires around the country that Republicans have, so many vulnerable states, and Democrats don't have to win them all. There are multiple paths to control of the Senate. And I think they'll get there.
Last thing I'd like to ask you, how much do you think the Joe Biden's vice presidential pick affects the race? Is it the kind of thing that could derail it? I mean, obviously, pick someone like Sarah Palin, it could be a problem. But I'm wondering just how much this will matter.
Yeah, and you know, before I answer with Sarah Palin, you know, maybe I'm a contrarian or I have a bad memory, but at the time, she brought energy to a ticket that was dead.
I agree.
And
I agree with
no
you.
No life. Yep. And I remember that convention and people were like, oh, this governor, you know, there was a buzz. There was an energy there. And the McCain ticket did not have that. And I think, that pick gets blamed for things that were already structurally wrong with the McCain ticket or were kind of going in the wrong direction.
That was a nice way to say that my analysis was lazy. So I appreciate that.
No, but it comes up a lot. So I think the news will get a disproportionate amount of attention to its impact on the race. I mean, it's a serious thing. It's going to be the number two person in the country. But ultimately, I think this comes down to a choice between two candidates, you know, and a referendum on the first 4 years of President Trump in office.
Nathan Gonzalez of Inside Elections. Go there right now, insideelections.com. Subscribe. It's worth it. And he gave you a little bit of a preview. We might have some news coming out in the next issue of the newsletter. Nathan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem.